It's Tuesday, October 13th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We're busy here at Normal West Coast Media Headquarters, cranking out the daily audio stash for you and getting our new volunteer help up online. My good buddy Jack over in Maryland has helped me out with the Normal weekly news from last week, and everything sounds pretty good, so it looks like we'll bring him on to help out with production of the daily audio stash. I'll let you know what happens as the time goes on, but coming up probably by next week, you'll have some co-produced stashes, which should free me up for more of my other duties with Normal. A quick heads up for those of you here in the Portland, Oregon area, I will be appearing at Dante's tonight, late tonight, 10 o'clock Pacific time, to be a guest on the Ed Foreman Show. This is a live comedy show done in the style of like a late night talk show. He's got a band that plays people on and a little set with a couch and a table, just like a regular late night comedy television show. And the character he plays, Ed Foreman, is kind of like a cross between Chris Farley's motivational speaker who lives in a van down by the river with a little bit of Stephen Colbert thrown in for good measure. I already did the show once before. It was a lot of fun. This time they tell me they'll have it videoed and available up on YouTube. So I'll get that posted at the stash as soon as I can.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time to take a look at our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. And I'm proud to welcome New York Normal onto the calendar. They've just added their information. And all month long, they're celebrating Pottoberfest, the month-long celebration of everything marijuana. Kicks off at the Atlantic Antic and in Brooklyn and culminates with Halloween at the New York City Village Halloween Parade. More information can be found at nynormal.org. Coming up this Thursday, Philly Normal's having their open meeting at the A Space at 4722 Baltimore Avenue. On Friday, the first official New York Harvest Festival after party features 420 Funk Mob and special guest George Clinton from P-Funk. You can check out the details there at damsam.com. That's damnsam.com for more tickets and info. On Saturday, Normal of Waco, Texas is having their litter pickup on Texas State Highway number 164. They've adopted 2 miles of the Texas Highway and are going to clean it up, letting the entire community know that we cannabis consumers care. And on Sunday, Philly Normal will be involved with AIDS Walk Philadelphia 2009, taking place at the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. You can find out more information at phillynormal.org. To get your events listed on the cannabis community calendar, send me an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll tell you how you can get involved. It's a Normal shout-out. Our shout-outs today go to the state of Virginia. There's new Normal chapters forming as we speak. The University of Virginia has a new chapter that's just about to become certified, and Sabrina from our Normal National offices is involved in getting Virginia Normal formed, a statewide chapter for the state of Virginia. So if you'd like some information on that, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Also, a shout out to my homies in San Bernardino, California area. I'll be down at the Cypress Hill Smokeout taking place next weekend, October 23rd and 24th, at the San Manuel Amphitheater. There's going to be tons of hip-hop impresarios there, including Cypress Hill, Sublime in their new reformed lineup, the Deftones, Cottonmouth Kings, and plenty of others. I'm part of a legalization panel with Debbie Goldsberry, Ed Rosenthal, and others. We'll have more information on the Stash at stash.normal.org. Now, coming up on your daily audio stash, we begin with your hemp headlines and a look at PayPal, the online payment service, which has frozen the accounts of California Normal because they accept listings for doctors that recommend medical marijuana. Also in California, the sheriff of Mendocino County is forced to return pounds of hash to medical marijuana patients. And in the state of Virginia, activists including Dr. Bronner from Dr. Bronner Soaps are arrested for planting industrial hemp seeds on the lawn of the DEA headquarters. Gotta like that. Tam from the MarijuanaMusicAwards.com website is currently busy with the 2010 Marijuana Music Awards, so I'm playing you some of the best of our daily toker tunes from the past year and a half. I've decided it's Rocktober today, and we're going to play a song from the Super Suckers called Can Pipe. And we round things out with our cannabis conversations featuring an exclusive interview with the founder of Normal, Keith Stropp, and Dr. Lester Grinspoon, the author of Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine, and one of the pioneers in studying medical marijuana back in the 60s before anyone had any idea of its medical properties. Those two gentlemen will be appearing in Massachusetts at the Statehouse tomorrow to argue for the legalization of marijuana for all adults and how that is a personal privacy right under the Massachusetts Constitution. It's a long shot case, but if we're talking about it, we're winning. So we wish both of them the best of luck. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. PayPal dumps California Normal, quote, "We have made the business decision to not be involved with this type of business," end quote. From California Normal's Dale Gehringer. PayPal, the well-known internet payment company, has told California Normal that it will no longer accept payments to our, quote, type of business, end quote, because we accept listing payments from cannabis-recommending physicians. After years of offering free listings to physicians and collectives at our website, canormal.org, California Normal began charging a yearly listing fee to cover our costs last year. PayPal froze California Normal's account in June, saying that by accepting listing fees from collectives, we were violating their acceptable use policy, which says, quote, "You may not use PayPal in the purchase or sale of narcotics," end quote. Although narcotics were not being sold over the California Normal site, we reluctantly agreed to stop accepting listing fees from collectives that dispense medical marijuana, recognizing that even though they are legal under state law, they are illegal under federal law. However, we continued to accept payments online from doctors, attorneys, and members. Now PayPal has stopped accepting payments from the California Normal site because we continued to accept listing payments from physicians. Under a ruling upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, Conant v. Walters in 2003, physicians have the First Amendment right to discuss and recommend medical marijuana for their patients, although they may not distribute it or help patients in finding it. PayPal was informed of this and wrote back, quote, "We are not arguing the legality of this issue. We are simply stating that we have made the business decision to not be involved with this type of business," end quote. Because of its discriminatory policy and disregard of physicians' First Amendment rights, California Normal submits that PayPal is not the, quote, type of business, end quote, to be used by those who advocate for human rights. We will file a complaint with the Federal Banking Committee over their practices. Located in San Jose, California, PayPal was founded in 1998 and was acquired by eBay, California gubernatorial candidate Meg Whitman's former company, in 2002. You may complain to PayPal at 2211 North 1st Street, San Jose, California, 95131, or by calling 408-376-7400. PayPal has been removed from the Stash Tip Jar, and I have canceled my production company's PayPal account. PayPal's decision not to be involved in our type of business, when that business is in the providing of a directory of doctors who recommend a legal medicine, is astonishing. They say it's a business decision, which to me means they decided that being involved with a website full of doctors' names would be too risky. How? The doctors are legal. Their recommendations are legal. The people receiving and using the recommendations are legal. So there's no legal risk involved. It can't be that there's a business risk that somehow other businesses are boycotting PayPal because it processes legal payments from doctors to California Normal. No, this is nothing but another bigoted move from a company that thinks it knows more about medicine than doctors do. A company that thinks you and me and others who use marijuana as medicine are criminals, frauds, and economic undesirables. I encourage you to visit stash.normal.org and steal the little PayPal anti-graphic that I've made and place it on your websites and pass it on to everyone you know. We showed Kellogg's not to mess with the cannabis community. Let's show PayPal that there are a lot of us online and we're not supporting them anymore. Mendocino County Sheriff ordered to return hash to patients. From the Ukiah Daily Journal. Mendocino County Sheriff Tom Allman has been ordered to give back 32 marijuana hash patties to two Redwood Valley defendants after criminal charges against them were dropped. Mendocino County Superior Court Judge Ronald Brown signed the order, which was filed October 1st, after he dismissed the case against Shelton Rain Sutherland, age 29, and John Bennett Henderson, age 34, in July. According to court documents, Brown ruled, quote, "There would not have been probable cause for a search warrant," end quote. The flat, hard patties are each less than a quarter inch thick, about as big around as a baseball, and appear to have been made by pouring a concentrated liquid form of marijuana into a mold. The patties each weigh about 27 grams, a little less than an ounce. Henderson and Sutherland will receive 32 patties because the legal amount for a marijuana patient to have at the time of the seizure was 8 ounces, according to the order, and 4 doctors' recommendations were admitted as evidence in the case. Deputies arrested Sutherland and Henderson after a compliance check on August 7, 2008, that led to a search warrant at Sutherland's home. Authorities seized more than 100 marijuana plants, 12 pounds of dried marijuana, 160 hash patties, and $20,000 in cash. They were charged together, and defense attorney Omar Figueroa defended them, along with renowned attorney J. Tony Serra, both from San Francisco. Figueroa argued the deputies didn't reveal evidence in the affidavit used to obtain the search warrant that Sutherland and others in her home had tried to present doctors' recommendations for the marijuana. Any day where cops have to give back almost 2 pounds of hash is a good day. When will police stop wasting citizens' time in these cases where there is a clear medical recommendation? While the defendants did have many plants, much medicine, and lots of hash, don't forget that it is prohibition that forces this kind of hoarding of medicine. Patients are subject to rip-offs and crop failures, and if they don't produce a lot of their own medicine for the bad times, they're subject to ridiculous prices in dispensaries or on the black market. If police are concerned that the $20,000 in cash and large amounts were thanks to illegal black market operations disguised as medical need, then they should support legalizing that market and removing the prohibition profit that entices people to cheat the system. Dr. Bronner among those arrested for planting hemp at DEA headquarters. From the Huffington Post. A group of civilly disobedient hemp farmers and business leaders were arrested Tuesday morning while digging up the lawn to plant industrial hemp seeds at the headquarters of the Drug Enforcement Administration. David Bronner, the president of Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, a more than 60-year-old company that does tens of millions of dollars of business annually, was among those arrested. Bronner buys the hemp used in his soaps from Canadian farmers. He was arrested outside the DEA museum, which shares space with the headquarters. Quote, "Our kids are going to come to this museum and say, 'My God, your generation was crazy. What the hell is wrong with you people?'" End quote, he said, as Arlington County Police handcuffed him and walked him to a waiting car. Wayne Hodge and Will Allen, farmers from North Dakota and Vermont respectively, brought shovels and seeds to the protest, where they were joined by representatives of Vote Hemp, which advocates for federal legislation that would allow states to craft their own hemp policies. Currently, 9 states, Hawaii, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Montana, North Dakota, Vermont, Oregon, and West Virginia, allow industrial hemp production or research. But federal law, which requires nearly impossible to obtain permits to grow hemp, trumps those state laws. A bill introduced by Representative Ron Paul of Texas and Representative Barney Frank of Massachusetts would allow states to craft their own policies. Of all the insanities in the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, the ban on industrial hemp is the looniest. We have the Drug Enforcement Administration enforcing a ban on something that is not a drug. They'll tell you that by strict interpretation of the law, hemp does contain THC, so it has to be banned, even though the THC contained in hemp is so minute that you could literally burn a field of the stuff and not catch the slightest of buzzes. They'll tell you that if hemp were legal, growers of illicit high THC pot would hide their crops in between the rows of hemp. Any farmer can tell you that what you'd get is cross-pollination. The hemp would ruin the high of the pot, and the pot would ruin the strength of the hemp. Then they'll tell you that if hemp were legal, law enforcement would be burdened trying to determine which fields were hemp and which were pot. This doesn't seem to be a problem for the police in China, Australia, Canada, or most of Europe, however, as they seem to be able to tell the difference between a tall, reedy hemp plant and a short, bushy pot plant without much difficulty. Maybe our American cops are just too stupid to handle basic botany. The ban on hemp remains for 2 reasons. One is to protect the entrenched business interests that would stand to lose market share to a legal hemp crop. Hemp can produce anything you can make from a tree or a barrel of oil and do it cheaper, make it better, and cause less environmental damage along the way. Hemp paper resists oxidation far better than wood paper. Hemp press boards are as strong as steel and save our forests. Hemp seed oil has the highest energy value of any seed oil crop. All current diesel engines can run on hemp seed oil with no modifications required. Hemp seed is one of nature's highest protein foods and a source of important antioxidants. Hemp cloth is impervious to mildew, repels water, and holds heat better, and requires no pesticides. Can you begin to imagine all the companies that would lose money if forced to compete fairly with hemp? And the second reason is psychological. If hemp is legal, cannabis is just a plant. It's a subtle thing, but under the current framework, the government can tell us cannabis is an evil drug. But if hemp is legal, then sometimes cannabis is an evil drug, and sometimes it is just a plant. Once cannabis is sometimes just a plant, it's harder to scare people into thinking it can be evil. We are approaching the 400th anniversary of the first colonial hemp plantations in North America. Hemp is our American heritage. This country exists because of hemp, and our entire history is infused with its cultivation and use. The forces that combined to ban hemp in the 20th century have stolen our very birthright and declared nature itself to be illegal.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins, no, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change, now let's see what you can do.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling while promoting the message of reform. To donate your song for possible use on the stash, enter it in the next Marijuana Music Awards contest today. All right, Stashards, it's kind of a no-frills Toker Tunes for the next few weeks as we play some best-ofs from the past year and a half of my tenure here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash. I felt like rocking today for Rocktober, so I'm going back to the vaults to pull out that little thrasher tune called Can Pipe by the Super Suckers. If you want a download of it or more information, just go to the search box in the header at stash.normal.org and type in Super Suckers, all one word. This is the Super Suckers with Can Pipe.
Take a hit of the can pipe, honey, baby. Take a hit of the can pipe, man. Take a hit of the can pipe, I'll make it. I'll make it from an aluminum can. Take a hit of the can pipe, Presidente, because I'll make it for free. Safety pin on my shoelace, just a kiss, I'll run it to a friend in me.
Take a hit of the can pipe, honey, baby. Take a hit of the can pipe, man.
Travel the world. simple solution called a peace revolution. And now let's take back America.
This is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations. Well, tomorrow's a very special day in the history of cannabis law reform in that the state of Massachusetts will finally be debating the constitutionality of the ban on marijuana. And joining us here by telephone to talk about it are two men who'll be testifying tomorrow and names you should recognize in the cannabis community. Of course, the founder of Normal, Keith Straup, is joining us, as well as Dr. Lester Grinspoon, emeritus from Harvard and author of Understanding Marijuana and many other books. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show.
Welcome. Nice to be here, Russ.
It's a delight.
So this, of course, is stemming from a lot of work that you two gentlemen have been doing. Keith, can you kind of set the table for us and let us know what brings you guys to the Massachusetts State House for this testimony?
Well, there are actually two things going on that happen to be coincidental right now. Lester and I have been working with the Massachusetts legislature as long as I've known Lester, and that goes back to the early 1970s. And at times, it gets pretty discouraging when you're dealing with state legislators because they're parochial and they've got other interests and they're always afraid they're going to get defeated at the next election. On the other hand, we all know that Massachusetts is one of the most progressive states in the country, and it is, without question. So we are up here, number one, because they are finally holding a hearing on a legalization bill. That's not a bill that just says let's stop arresting smokers, and it's not a bill that just says let's legalize marijuana for medical use. It's a bill that says let's legalize marijuana, responsible marijuana use for all adults. It's a bill that was drafted almost 20 years ago. But this is the first time I think it's going to have a legislative hearing in Massachusetts. And frankly, right now in the entire country, there are only two legalization bills pending. One's in California, the Ammiano bill, and one here in Massachusetts. A third one will be shortly introduced in your state of Oregon, as I'm sure you're aware, Russ. So we're up here first to testify in support of this bill to tax and legalize and regulate marijuana in Massachusetts. And then secondly, Lester and I were both very much involved back in the bust that occurred at the Boston Common in 2007, where Rick Cusick, the associate publisher of High Times, and I were busted for smoking a joint. Now, obviously, you come to a Boston Freedom Rally on the Boston Common, the only purpose of that, it's a smoke-in. It's an event to protest marijuana laws. So, naturally, Rick and I were sharing a booth for Normal and High Times, and we were sharing a joint. And the undercover agents came and arrested us. Well, Lester Grinspoon was kind enough to serve as our principal expert witness in that case. Charles Nesson, Lester's friend, a Harvard law professor, was kind enough to represent us at trial. And we took the stand at the time and testified, of course we were smoking a joint. What else would we have been doing there? And that we don't think there's anything wrong with it. So the morning following the testimony on legalization, we have the oral argument in the Court of Appeals in Massachusetts. So it's a twofer, and it's very exciting. It's a long shot, but we might get lucky You know, right now, Alaska is the only state in the country that has ruled that the personal use of marijuana is protected constitutionally by the right to privacy. We are arguing that Massachusetts should become the second, and that will be the thrust of our argument on Thursday morning.
Excellent. Now, Dr. Grinspoon, you're well known for, you know, documenting the medical side of cannabis. What are you going to offer in testimony for legalization of cannabis for all uses, even the non-medical?
Well, the fact is, the medical marijuana is the part of marijuana that these legislators have heard about most, because, you know, someone once said that that we who are interested in medical marijuana were launching a Trojan horse. And in some ways, we didn't purposely do this, but it's turned out that way because people's attitudes towards marijuana changes dramatically when they see a parent or an aunt or a friend use it for medicinal purposes. And as one of them said to me, the wife of one of the associate deans here at Harvard, whose mother had pancreatic cancer and whom I helped to get started on marijuana to treat her nausea, they couldn't believe what it did for their mother. And the children, his wife, who used to come down, as she said, like a banshee on those three boys because she learned they smoked marijuana in college. And she said to me, "Boy, I feel like a damn fool. What's all the fuss?" They would sit around with mother and they'd roll, all three of the four of them would roll a joint and they'd sit around and they'd have a great time and she'd feel wonderful, her nausea. And I don't want to reveal names, but my husband and I were so relieved that she didn't have to put up with that awful nausea she was constantly suffering from. Now, they've changed their minds about this, mm-hmm. and I think lots of other people are, too. Now, it's hard to appeal to legislators that, look, this is the best recreational drug going, because you don't have any drunken binges, you shouldn't drive at all with it, but you don't drive. If anything, you're going to drive more cautiously and hug the right side of the road. And you don't get violent and aggressive, just the opposite. So, you know, if we were a really rational society and understood that everybody has a need for some degree of alteration of consciousness, we'd say, well, the best way to do that is with marijuana, never mind alcohol and cocaine and all that other stuff. It's hard to appeal to them on the basis of what I call enhancement, all the things that you and I know about the ways in which, without my going into it here, it enhances everything from the sexual experience to one's creative juices, if one's writing or painting or what have you. But the thing I think that they should be responsive to now is medical marijuana. And I used to believe it was possible to sustain a program which would allow marijuana for for patients while at the same time being prohibited for any other reason. The fact is, this can't work. It can't work for two reasons. One, we've seen what happens in California. You know, the feds are arresting people, even patients, let alone growers and so forth, all sorts of fuss. But more importantly, in all those states, they define, and they always say, debilitating or terminal illness. Well, that doesn't take into account, let's say, a woman who suffers terrible premenstrual cramps. Marijuana is great for that. Or someone who even has intractable hiccups. Not everybody will get, and if you haven't had intractable hiccups, you have to understand, as someone like me does, that it can get pretty exhausting after the second or third day. Mm-hmm. Marijuana, for many people, will interrupt it just like that. They're never going to put things like that in the conditions for which a doctor can write a note to allow people to do it. And the third reason is, you know, doctors don't want to be the gatekeepers. Lots of people who want to get medical-grade marijuana nowadays will invent, they'll have a fictitious illness. Oh, doctor, my back, I've got so much pain in my back, I need some marijuana. So for those three reasons, it's just not going to work as part of a prohibition. Mm. For all three categories of use, the only thing that is going to work is getting rid of the prohibition and regulating it like alcohol and taxing it. This serves all the purposes, including it, making it more difficult for youngsters to get hold of it. And at least in Massachusetts, anybody who owns a saloon, or a, what do you call it, a place to sell liquor, a liquor store, boy, they're going to be very careful that they don't sell to someone underage, because the state has really taken licenses away from people who get caught doing that. And so it's much more difficult for kids to get liquor than it is cannabis. They get that easily. So for all these reasons, this is the only sensible approach, the only ultimate approach to this problem.
I'm wondering, Keith, if you could expand on that a little bit, the concept that allowing the choice of cannabis as a recreational intoxicant would actually be good for the public health and safety by giving people something to turn away from alcohol, tobacco, or pharmaceuticals.
Well, I mean, just on the basic level of trying to quantify the harm that's done, I realize that's a little difficult, but for example, there's something like, I think, 400,000 or more people die every year from alcohol overdose. And there's...
That's tobacko.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's tobacco, that's right, about 450,000. And about 50,000 on alcohol overdose. Now, that's not the end of the world. I understand there are millions of people who do it, but we're not talking about people that just get drunk or smoke tobacco and get in a car crash. We're talking about people who die from overdose of those drugs. You cannot die from an overdose of marijuana. We had a witness at a hearing back in, I think, 1987. Norma was trying to get marijuana reclassified, that testified that in order to have an overdose, you'd have to ingest approximately 1,600 pounds of marijuana at one sitting. And while I've had some friends that did their best to try, it just simply isn't possible. So on basic safety, obviously, marijuana is a far safer drug, because even if you smoke too much, you simply fall asleep on the sofa. It doesn't hurt you. So without question, marijuana is a better alternative for those who want to get intoxicated. But I think as Lester pointed out, it's more than that. It also is that for a lot of people who their use of marijuana may be a little bit between medical and recreational. It doesn't fit in the traditional, they're not a cancer patient or an MS patient, but they're also not smoking just to have fun. They're trying to deal with the problem they have. Well, whether it's hiccups or, you know, one of these other problems.
Or even a depression.
Yeah, depression, for example. You go into a doctor and tell them you have depression, you'd like to have marijuana recommended. You might get that in California, but I don't think you're going to get it in any other state.
And you won't get it in California from a doctor, because that isn't among the listed
things. Yeah. So, I mean, what Lester is saying, I think, is an interesting point we've come to in this movement. In order to have marijuana available to all of the people that need it for what we might call medical reasons, the only way you're ever going to achieve that is by legalizing the responsible use of marijuana for all adults. And, of course, the added benefit is right now we have almost 900,000 people arrested every year in this country, 90% of which are of whom are arrested for simple possession and use. People like us that simply smoke marijuana. Well, obviously, when you get arrested for marijuana, even if you never spend a day in jail, and some people do, but if you don't, you know, you lose your student loans, you lose your public housing, you lose all kinds of benefits that have nothing. You lose your driving privilege, for example, in about half the states, even if the offense has nothing to do with driving while you're smoking. So instead of destroying people's lives and careers, what we should be doing is encouraging them that if we're going to use an intoxicant, use the least harmful one of all, and that's clearly marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about this hearing that's taking place tomorrow. If people want to show up and offer their support, or just to see how the wheels of government turn so slowly, where and when should they be there for that hearing?
Well, I'm reaching quickly. It is, I believe it starts at 10 o'clock, and it's the Joint Committee on Revenue hearing on H.R. 2929, an act to regulate and tax the cannabis industry. It's at the State House, and anybody who's familiar with Boston understands the State House is right for the Boston Common there. You can't miss it. So we will be there early because we need to sign up and make sure we're ready to, in line to testify. And with a little bit of luck, we might be able to get Massachusetts to do the right thing here. You know, it's interesting because when we brought this challenge, smoking marijuana was still a crime in Massachusetts. That's why I was arrested along with Rick Husick. But since then, I'm pleased to say that the wise citizens of Massachusetts, by a vote of 65%, have eliminated all penalties for possession and use of up to an ounce of marijuana. So they made some major progress since 2007 when we were arrested. But nonetheless, you can imagine the number of people who still have criminal records and are still getting busted with an ounce and a half, for example, so they're not covered. If we could get the Court of Appeals to adopt a decision similar to what Alaska has done, then all of those people would be set free. So it's an exciting time. It's a long shot, but I'm delighted to have the privilege of trying to challenge it, and I'm especially privileged to have people like Lester Grinspoon and Professor Charles Nesson supporting us on this. If you're in Massachusetts, those are the two guys you want to have with you.
Good to hear that we've got the good guys on our side.
We got the intellectuals on our side this time, Russ. That's the good thing.
That's right. Well, we have to wind things up here just at the end of our interview, so I want to give Dr. Grinspoon another chance to talk to our audience a little bit. And going forward with this testimony tomorrow, what do you think? What do you think about the chances, and what do you think it's going to take to finally end this stupid prohibition?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I think it's unlikely that the committee will act favorably on it, let alone the legislature, because, while Massachusetts seems to be way ahead of some, it's not where Alaska was at the time of the Raven case. What was that,
1977.
Oh, the trial was 74.
Yep.
So I don't think that's likely, but, as Roger Fisher said in his book on international relations, you've got to slice the salami one little thin slice at a time, and this is an important thin slice. And one of the reasons Keith and I have both, I stopped testifying in Massachusetts about 20 years ago. I was so fed up once a senator told me that I was being impertinent when he asked me if I smoked, Dr. Grinspoon, do you smoke marijuana? And I said to him, finally, after being asked this in Washington hearings and all over the country, I said, Senator, I'll be glad to answer that if you will tell me whether, if I answer affirmatively, you will see me as a more or less credible witness. And that guy stood up on his hind heels and pointed at me and said, you are being impertinent, and he left. Now, so I don't have great, but the point is that what Keith and I hope to accomplish tomorrow, and other people, I'm sure, is to get more and more into this record that makes it clear that this is where we've got to go ultimately with this. And the point I want to make tomorrow is a point that I've made fairly recently, certainly since Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine was written. Then I thought we could use it as a medicine right alongside with the prohibition once we got it into Schedule II. Well, the experience in California and elsewhere, and the way they restrict the symptoms and syndromes for which it can be used, we're not using a fraction of the medical potential. So if they're really interested, they may not be interested in the recreational part of it, they may not be interested in the enhancement part of it, but more and more, as they see people they know and care about use it as a medicine and see that it does not make them turn green, they're coming to understand that maybe the better way to deal with this and the better way to deal with young people using it is to pass this kind of legislation. That, I can tell you, I probably won't be here to see it, but it's going to happen.
Excellent.
Russ, Russ, let me just add briefly that I think what both Lester and I feel like is we have an obligation to make a complete record. Anytime a state legislature is willing to honestly consider legalizing marijuana for personal use, we're going to support it, and we're going to make the best record we can. We can't tell when it's going to work and come through and they're going to actually make the right decision. We know most of the time they're not, because most of the time they're afraid they're going to be defeated at the next election. Politicians are infamous for being, you know, pansies about that kind of stuff. We all know that. But occasionally they do something on the high level. And so we're going to make sure that win or lose, we leave a record in Massachusetts that's going to help people for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. And I guarantee you, within 5 years, they will have legalized marijuana in Massachusetts. As Lester says, he and I may or may not be here to enjoy it, but they're going to do it. And we're going to get them a little closer tomorrow.
Oh, it's a wonderful vision of the future, and we're so glad that both of you gentlemen have been fighting for, like you said, 40 years now to make this happen. We really appreciate it. Keith Stropp is the founder of Normal, and Dr. Lester Grinspoon is emeritus at Harvard Medical School, and between the two of you, probably have forgotten more about marijuana than I'll ever know. Thanks so much for joining us.
As we grow older, that's certainly true.
It happens too often now, Ross.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder that if you want to get involved at the grassroots level in ending adult marijuana prohibition, you can learn all you need to know at norml.org. You can also join the national chapter, or if you'd like to join a local chapter near you, visit normal.org/chapters. And if there isn't a local chapter near you, I can help you get involved in starting one. Just send me an email with your name, city, and state to stash@normal.org. Coming up on tomorrow's Daily Audio Stash, we feature the California Marijuana Report produced by Eric Brenner and an exclusive interview with controversial figure Steve Cubby. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.